1 o'clock and y'all are real quiet. So y'all must be looking to go ahead and dig in. There you go. Well, I'm glad y'all are here to answer your own questions tonight. So it is encouraging to see everybody out tonight. We are continuing our study of Deuteronomy tonight. Lord willing, we will get through chapters 23 and 24, time permitting, tonight. That's the text for the evening, chapters 23 and 24 of Deuteronomy. Before we dig in tonight into Deuteronomy, let's begin with a word of prayer. Most holy God, our Father in heaven, we are so thankful for your love for your people. We're so thankful for your providential care for your people throughout the ages and here tonight for this day which you've created. We're thankful for this opportunity and this place that we've had to come together to assemble as a body of your family to study a portion of your word. We pray for open hearts and open ears, that you would guide us in our study tonight into all truth. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen. All right. So Deuteronomy, chapters 23 and 24. And where we find ourselves in Deuteronomy, in this section of chapters 12 to 26, we're really in the meat of Deuteronomy. In this middle chunk of the book, and what is absolutely Moses explaining the law to the people. Now we have seen in Deuteronomy so far, we have seen sermons and preaching that Moses has been giving to the people of Israel. But we here in chapters 20 or 12 to 26, we're seeing pretty specific case by case instances of Moses explaining the law. If you remember in chapter 1, of Deuteronomy, so that Moses set out to explain the law. And what law are we talking about? Law of Moses, the Ten Commandments. We're talking about the Ten Commandments. Deuteronomy, the namesake of Deuteronomy, is the second giving of the law, or the second law. That's coming from chapter 5. Where Moses gave the law for the second time, the first time being Exodus 20, Mount Sinai. And I have mentioned, I believe, a time or two in some of the classes that I have been able to teach, that a way that I have been looking at Deuteronomy and has helped me study this book is basically that chapter 5 and the Ten Commandments given in chapter 5 serve as a table of contents for chapters 12 to 26. Now, I'm not going to argue with you if you don't agree with that theory, but it sure makes a lot of sense if you want to look at Deuteronomy through that lens, beginning in chapter 12 and just start with the first commandment. And just go through. And one of the reasons why I feel like that's been helpful for me, things that we talked about last week, things that we're talking about tonight, there are instances, there are cultural differences between the people at this time and the modern reader that may not make sense to us on the surface, but I think that if we go back and say, hey, what is Moses trying to get across to Israel here, and look at the case-by-case instance of the Ten Commandments, I think that they might help make a little more sense. The past few weeks, Brother Patrick has been going over chapters 20 to 22. What commandment might be getting covered in the past week or so that we've been going over? We talked a lot about death, murder. Is there a particular Ten Commandments you could think of that might speak to that? Thou shalt not kill. Exactly. Thou shalt not murder. And there's a concept here. The concept that there is a principle, a general principle to each commandment given. And what we see, have been studying on Wednesday nights, are series of verses, series of chapters that have an underlying principle throughout those, that series. And if you follow along, that we're really going through the Ten Commandments from chapter 5. And I hope that makes sense. I'm going to try and follow along that path tonight because, as I mentioned, it's helped me break Deuteronomy up into sections and try to make particular verses and instances make sense that may not have at first glance. And what we're seeing in Moses explaining the law, the Ten Commandments, is God, through Moses, is explaining God's view of all of these cases. And we've talked about a wide variety of random incidences varying across the board these past few weeks, whether it be murder. We studied about adultery last week at the end of chapter 22. We've, you know, everything up to your neighbor's cow getting loose. I mean, we've talked about every instance in life that, that the people of Israel are going to be coming in contact with, and we're seeing God's view of these instances and how God views things and how we are to view these things. We're to view life with respect to God's order of things, being compassionate to one another, full of mercy, a general reverence for the sanctity of life. What God has given, man cannot take away. One of the examples I found really interesting going back, trying to review to go into tonight's text, especially last week, chapter 22, the life of animals being intertwined with how we deal with each other. And that's significant. Can anybody think of reasons why that may be important for us to understand? Verse 5, which of you having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on a Sabbath day will not immediately pull him out? And maybe a principle there being that God is trying to create a culture, we talked about this last week, create a culture to where if people are aware of taking care of animals, then surely they would take care of each other. Brother Hooten?
What this chapter boils down to, really, a lot of talking about animals is doing what's common sense and doing what's right. You know, consider your neighbor. Do other things you don't think do unto you.
Yes, sir.
If you lose something like an animal or something, well, you have to kind of find it to take care of it until you live like you want.
And if they're common sense. Moses is explaining that to you, so because that happens in life too. Chapter 22, to segue into chapter 23, we're talking about not committing adultery at the end of the chapter, and seeing that in Moses explaining thou shalt not commit adultery, again, on the surface, adultery is much more than a man cheating on his wife. There's, when you go below the surface, that principle is so deep, and it affects so many different parts of life. We see in the end of chapter 22, for instance, the instance of a man falsely accusing a woman of adultery, basically, that he's engaged to, and who gets involved? Well, it's the parents, and it's the father of that woman. And we really see that thou shalt not commit adultery is implying, yes, not committing adultery, but more than that, it's implying wholeness, it's implying completeness, it's implying a respect and a reverence for God's order of things. God created the family. God created man and woman and blessed that proper union of a man and a woman. Propriety. Which I had to get Abby to look that word up. But that's the idea. It's so much more than just what we would think on the surface. We mentioned familial relationships, how to keep your family in that case whole, keeping your whole family pure, clean, etc. And that brings us to chapter 23. And again, there were no chapter divisions, so this is continuing in the same line of thought. So let's read the first 8 verses of chapter 23 and then see if we can make a connection to what we're talking about and how that might be going along the line of the family and which family we're talking about here. Chapter 23, reading to the, by the ESV, no one whose testicles are crushed or whose male organ is cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord. No one born of a forbidden union may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of his descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord. No Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of them may enter the assembly of the Lord forever, because they did not meet you with bread and with water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pethor of Mesopotamia, to curse you. But the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam. Instead, the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loved you. You shall not seek their peace or their prosperity all your days forever. You shall not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. You shall not abhor an Egyptian, because you are a sojourner in his land. Children born to them in the third generation may enter the assembly of the Lord. What do we see here? What are we talking about in these first 8 verses? Special thing to be a member of God's family. We have been studying about that every night that we've had this Deuteronomy class. God desired to have a people. God is holy, and he will have his people to be holy. These 8 verses we're talking about admission into the assembly of God. And that word assembly that's used might lean even more towards the actual worshiping community of Israel, the true Israelites, not necessarily just the nation state, because there were resident aliens who were living there in these different lands who may not necessarily be a part of the true worshiping community of God, but we're talking about people who are going to be in God's presence. And the theme throughout this section is just like what we talked about in regards to adultery and the husband, wife, family. Wholeness, completeness. No man who's been emasculated can enter into the assembly. That's not holy. That's not God's way that things should go. So those people are not going to be allowed into the assembly of God's people.
Supposed to bring your lame animals and your sick animals. It's supposed to be the pets. And it's just respect for God. I think he's trying to keep God's people pure and keep those starters out that are bringing in the idolatry, things like that.
Same way the influence. Absolutely. Being careful of our influence and Israel's influence of the cultures around them. Again, pointing to the picture of God's order of things. Verse 2, no person born of an adulterous relationship may enter the assembly of God. So only those people who are born of a legitimate, God-ordained union were going to be allowed. It says, to the 10th generation. When you see 10, that means forever. You can interchange that. 10, complete, forever. And I was thinking about this when we sang Amazing Grace on Sunday morning. When we've been there 10,000 years, it's forever. And in that song, even though we've been there forever, we haven't even gotten started. Verses 3 through 6. No Ammonites or Moabites were going to be allowed forever into the assembly of God. And again, tying this to verse 2, what's the connection between the Ammonites and the Moabites in the context of this group of verses? Where did the Ammonites and the Moabites come from? It mentions, Brother Hooten, what you were saying, the instances where they were opposed to God's people. But Ammonites and Moabites came from Lot's daughters. And it was a terrible story. Basically, Lot's daughters thought that they had seen every last man that ever lived be incinerated. So they got their father Lot drunk and had an incestuous relationship with them. So again, just like verse 2, it's the same thing. And when Ammonites and Moabites are mentioned to the people of Israel, they knew that story, and they knew what that meant. Verse 7, Edomites. Who are the Edomites? Esau. And maybe especially at this point, Israel coming into their own land, coming into their own nation, Edomites being a brother nation to Israel. And then maybe an unlikely people to not have disdain for. And who might that be? The Egyptians. And why?
I can't imagine having any kind of thoughts about Egyptians, but because they were in their land and they multiplied there. They became a huge nation inside Egypt.
And to the third generation, the Egyptians and the Edomites may enter the assembly, might mean that was basically a probationary time period, that by the time three generations passed, that whatever Edomites or Egyptians might still be living in Israel at that time, maybe they really wanted to be there. Maybe they wanted to be included in God's people. and God was going to allow it. Any other questions, comments of that section there? Does that make sense?
You know, it's kind of odd in that section that here's a time where people have multiple wives and they talk about illegitimate children. And I find it kind of hard to believe that, you know, it didn't matter how many wives people had or how many children they had, but somebody, if you had a child by somebody that was not your wife, well, would that mean servants? Like with Jacob, with the wives that he had wives by servants. So, I mean, Ishmael, Abraham, and Sarah had a child by a servant. It's just a little hard. It's a little difficult for me because of, you know, we are in a society and it's all, and we hope it's like it's always going to be, that it would be one man and one woman for life. And that's what our definition of marriage would be. Well, it's getting kind of complicated.
Right.
But within the church, it needs to be that way.
Absolutely. I agree.
Let's continue on here, verses 9 through 14 will be our next section. When you are encamped against your enemies, then you shall keep yourself from every evil thing. If any man among you becomes unclean because of a nocturnal emission, then he shall go outside the camp. He shall not come inside the camp, but when evening comes, he shall bathe himself in water, and as the sun sets, he may come inside the camp. You shall have a place outside the camp, and you shall go out to it, and you shall have a trowel with your tools, and when you sit down outside, you shall dig a hole with it and turn back and cover up your excrement, because the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp to deliver you and to give up your enemies before you. Therefore, your camp must be holy, so that he may not see anything indecent among you and turn away from you. Okay. What do we see here? What are we talking about in verses 9 through 14? And how might this relate to anything to do with under the umbrella of committing adultery?
Well, he just got through talking about purity in the assembly of God, and now he's talking about purity outside of the assembly of God.
Absolutely, Josh. Great point. He's talking about the purity in the assembly of God, again, wholeness in the family of God. We're dealing the first few verses there of very intimate parts of the body. And God is teaching Israel, as we have seen throughout Deuteronomy, especially coming to mind chapter 6, which is repeated in chapter 11, with regards to teaching your children and loving God with all your heart. There is no part of life, no matter what it is, from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep, there is no part of your life that God does not come into play. He should be on the forefront of our minds ever and always. When I talked about teaching our children, when you get up, when you walk by the way, when you lay down, that idea that we are to be saturated, just consumed with thinking about God, what would God want me to do today and in this situation? And God wanted the people of Israel to remain holy. God teaching discipline here for his people. Verse 14 says, why? Because the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp. Yes, I do. I don't want to get too far down that path, but yes. Hygienic purposes absolutely could be a part of this. I tend to not go there too much because I've heard too many people trying to explain away the law and the Bible with naturalistic explanations. Well, he told him not to eat pork just because there's trichinosis in the pork. It's like, he told him not to eat pork because he didn't want him to eat pork. So I think there's definitely a couple ways of looking at this, and Moses is teaching, again, principles that you can look at so many ways and think about all day long, and still there's an underpinning to all these different situations. When God's teaching discipline and keeping your camp clean, reminded me of the U.S. Navy SEALs. You know, there's one thing that the Navy SEALs do, and they teach them. They teach them when you wake up in the morning, you make your bed up, and you do it a certain way, and you never don't do it. And the Navy SEALs that I've heard of, they make their bed up the rest of their lives. And they do that because they're teaching them that there is significance in the small things. And this reminded me of that. God is teaching Israel, I don't care what you're doing. You're going to think about me, and I'm going to have you do things a certain way, because there's a bigger picture. There's a broader picture that God is trying to convey here for Israel and for us here tonight. God has a way of doing things. God walks and was going to be walking in the midst of the camp. You remember back to what chapter God said that he was going to physically dwell amongst Israel in Deuteronomy? What chapter was that? The chapter 12. The tabernacle was going to be going away. God was going to have a static physical presence where God was going to choose to dwell. We talked about how that was significant for a lot of reasons, how it was a picture of Jesus. And you shall call him Emmanuel, that's God with us. It reminded me of the song that we sing, Be With Me, Lord. And the line in that song, a constant sense of thy abiding presence, where'er I am, to feel that thou art near. Do we feel that God is near? Do I feel that Jesus is always abiding with me in my everyday life? Do we feel that we're in the midst of God tonight? Something to consider. Any questions, comments before we continue on?
Stresses the need for us to be holy so we can dwell in our midst. Maybe that's kind of the theme of these verses as well.
You're not going to dwell in the presence of God and be unholy. It's not going to happen. Absolutely. Okay. Moving along. Verse 15. And I will tell you that I believe we are transitioning to the next commandment after not committing adultery and all things pertaining to the family and the reflecting the family of God. And what is the next Ten Commandment? In chapter 5. Shalt not steal. That's exactly right. Verse 15, you shall not give up to his master a slave who has escaped from his master to you. He shall dwell with you in your midst in the place that he shall choose within one of your towns, wherever it suits him. You shall not wrong him. Okay. Slaves at this time, runaway slaves, slaves considered property. We're going to be seeing in these next several verses things pertaining to financial ways of dealing with one another and dealing with different situations in life. Runaway slaves were to be granted amnesty. You weren't supposed to take a slave that found his way to your property and sell that individual. That would be stealing. He doesn't belong to you. And why might this be the case? Why would this principle be here? What's Moses emphasizing again here?
Well, it's teaching not to belittle people, because if you think, oh, this is just a man, no, he's actually a human being. He's actually, you're still your brother, even though he's a slave.
Absolutely. That's a great point, Josh. We've talked about time and again, God caring for the vulnerable of society. And it's also reminding Israel that they were once runaway slaves, were they not? That's what the Israelite nation was. They were a bunch of runaway slaves. So, again, we see over and over God, and God through the language of Moses, reminding the people of who they are and where they came from, lest they forget. Verse 17 and 18, none of the daughters of Israel shall be a cult prostitute, and none of the sons of Israel shall be a cult prostitute. You shall not bring the fee of a prostitute or the wages of a dog into the house of the Lord your God in payment for any vow, for both of these are an abomination to the Lord your God. Okay. Prostitution being prohibited, religious prostitution especially being prohibited here. Israel instructed to not pay wages to those people. And what else did Moses say regarding the payment and money when God comes into play here?
Volunteer gifts from that kind of income.
Dirty money. God doesn't want any part of it. It is unholy. It's unclean. Verse 19 and 20, you shall not charge interest on loans to your brother. Interest on money, interest on food, interest on anything that is lent for interest. You may charge a foreigner interest, but you may not charge your brother interest, that the Lord your God may bless you in all that you undertake in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. All right, what do we see here? What are we talking about?
Different rules for the family than an outsider. Just kind of again emphasizes how we need to love one another because we're part of the same family. Don't try to take advantage of one another.
Great point. Not taking advantage of one another. Loans at this point in time were not like we think of loans today. From what I understand, loans in the biblical times and at the time period of Israel here, if you took out a loan, you really needed it. You were very poor and you needed money to live. Okay, this isn't a loan like I might think of, like I have an $800,000 house and I want a $1 million house, so I'm going to take out a $200,000 loan. That's not the kind of loan we're talking about here. Again, taking care of each other. Interest, most often interest was looked at as profit. So you're not to basically steal from your brother who doesn't have anything to begin with. That's why he needed the loan, and now you're charging him interest. That's unfair. That's not the way God would have you to treat one another. We're not going to profit off your brother. Any thoughts on profiting off a foreigner? I don't have anything there, so I thought it was pretty interesting that you could lend and charge interest for a foreigner.
Well, oftentimes if they needed that, they were poor, as you mentioned earlier. And so it would be difficult for them to repay it if it wasn't interesting to buy a property. And so it's just trying to help your poor brother.
And if you went to them and they were poor and they couldn't repay it, you might be thinking about taking something from them that they don't have, collateral. We'll talk about that a little more here tonight, hopefully. Verses 21 through 23, if you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin. You shall be careful to do what has passed your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. Okay. What Bible verse does this remind you of? Of not making a vow that you can't keep. I think this could best be summed up, these three verses here of Ecclesiastes 5, chapter 5, verse 5. It's better to not vow than to make a vow and what? Not pay. Okay, because you would essentially be cheating God at that point. If you vow, you need to pay, because we're not going to cheat God. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Great point.
Do yays be yays? Miss Rachel said, it reminded her of let your yes be yes and your no's be no's.
Being, keeping in fair and honest dealings with one another and with God. Absolutely. Great point. Okay. Last couple verses here of chapter 23. If you go into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes, as many as you wish, but you shall not put any in your bag. If you go into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the ears with your hand, but you shall not put a sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. Okay, what do we see here? Talking about not stealing.
Sounds like to me it's like you're walking down the road and you suddenly remember that you forgot your lunch and your neighbor's vineyard is standing right there, so you just take a few little grapes and go about your way. You can't put any bags like to go back. You can just get a few grapes and keep on walking.
Exactly right. If you're hungry or you're passing by the way, you may glean, but you can't bring a bag and a wheelbarrow and go to work on your neighbor's crops, because you'd be crossing a line there at some point where you'd be stealing from your neighbor. Does this remind you of any New Testament scripture?
Good job.
Luke chapter 6. And in Luke 6, the Pharisees were not mad at Jesus and his apostles for gleaning in the grain fields. They were mad at him for doing it on the Sabbath. So the Pharisees knew this law very well. And Luke 6 explains that. Of course, Jesus being the Lord over the Sabbath and dispelled those claims. Any other thoughts on chapter 23? I'm going to try to get through chapter 24. You might have to finish it next week, Patrick. I'm going to give it a shot. Try to move along here. Verses 1 through 4. What are we talking about in the first four verses of chapter 24?
Divorce. Remarriage.
Probably not talking about adultery, though, because what punishment is not mentioned?
Stoning.
Stoning, death. So we're not talking about adultery, although it may be akin. Still talking about stealing. Maybe the instance here, or maybe a way of thinking about this, for me at least, if you divorce a wife and someone else takes her, but you know that the law says that if that man dies, you can't lawfully take her again, if that makes sense. It's a complicated situation for me to grapple with. But maybe it would entice people to want to take a wife back. Maybe entice people to feel like they could murder the husband because they wanted the wife back to steal her away from that man. Here we see restrictions on that practice. Maybe that was a practice that was already happening. Maybe these restrictions are here because it was perhaps becoming too easy to get a divorce. Maybe.
I think you're talking about the seriousness of marriage.
Absolutely. Seriousness of marriage. And maybe if divorce and remarriage was that loose, it would be some sort of legal adultery. But again, no mention of the death sentence here. Verse 5, similar to something we looked at last week. Newly married man, this teaching here is to prevent the untimely death of a newly wedded man, to not steal a husband away from his wife too soon, to not steal joy from a newly wedded couple. And again, preserving, promoting the nuclear family, God's order of things, and that family being a reflection of the family of God. Verse 6, not take a millstone. What were mills used for? Treading wheat, making bread. And if you took the upper millstone, that mill was useless, and what would you be taking away from someone? Taking away their daily bread. Said you'd be taking a life in pledge. Verse 7. Kidnapping prohibited. Stealing life, taking someone and selling them for money, similar to the runaway slave instance. And what's the punishment for kidnapping? You shall purge the evil from your midst. Pumping gas over here, right before church. And on the TV at the gas pump, there's just all these kidnappings in the Nashville area. Purge the evil from your midst. Stealing life. One commentary I read mentioned social murder. And you really are. If you take someone out of Tennessee and send them to Malaysia, you're stealing that individual away from the family of God. You're stealing them away from their family. Of course, don't need to profit off of it. Verses 8 and 9. Verse 8 may have been tricky to see where that fits into the Ten Commandments. But then verse 9, we see how this might make sense given the Ten Commandments. And I would tell you, I believe we are transitioning to the next commandment. And verse 9 would follow right along in that. And what's the next Ten Commandment? Shall not murder. Shall not steal. Shall not bear false witness. What happened, and when we're talking about leprosy, if they'd have left it at that, it may be kind of confusing as to why this verse is here. But then he mentions in verse 9, he mentions Miriam. What was the story of Miriam? What did Miriam do? Why did she get leprosy? She lied. She lied against Moses. And God corrected her and gave her leprosy. So, shall not bear false witness. That's found in Numbers chapter 12. The story of Miriam and Aaron. God giving her leprosy. And again, the Israelite people, they knew these stories. And when Miriam was mentioned, they knew we're not just talking about leprosy. There's a lot more to the story. There's a principle there. And the Israelites knew that.
That would have been their lifetime.
Yes. They may have seen it. One of the lessons I listened to mentioned, I thought this was helpful for me to remember this, mentioning Miriam and likening that to dishonesty or the need to be honest. What principle do you think of when you think of a cherry tree in the United States? And George Washington chopping down a cherry tree. What's the moral of that story? Don't tell a lie. Honesty. And when you mention George Washington and cherry tree, we know the principle that story tells. So, didn't get through chapter 24. Sorry, Patrick. But we will continue on next week, Lord willing. My family will be out of town the next 2 weeks. We're leaving on Tuesday, and we won't be back until the 17th, which is a Tuesday. So I will not be here for these next couple weeks, but I'll be listening in, and appreciate y'all's time and comments tonight and questions. Um,